What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, it's kind of all about Microsoft, which is a weird thing to say. They had a big event this week announcing their Copilot Plus initiative, new Surface consumer PCs that we've been kind of, hoping to see for a long while. And sort of like a complete relaunch of how we think about Windows laptops, and especially how Windows laptops interact with ARM processors. So, bit of geeky stuff here, but I think Sherlyn and I are ready to dive into it because we have suffered through so many Windows on ARM PCs, and I think this is our moment, finally. So, as always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. Thanks. So this week was Microsoft Build, but it was not just Microsoft Build. Microsoft had a pre-build event, a zero-day event, I guess, where they invited media to come check out an announcement where we expected to hear more about Copilot AI stuff and also Surface consumer PCs. And basically, details were rumbling for a while that Microsoft and Qualcomm were working on something together, like getting those new Qualcomm chips, which we have not really talked about much, but these were chips they announced last fall. There were benchmarks going out, the Snapdragon X Elite and X Plus, and the benchmarks looked really good. Like, the benchmarks were shockingly good, and I didn't trust them for a very long time, but it seems like Microsoft did, because they essentially have built an entire new PC platform around them, and that's Copilot Plus. So Copilot Plus PCs are similar to, like, the AI PC stuff we've talked about for the past year from Intel and AMD, but this is a full-on initiative with, like, minimum specs from Microsoft. So that is 16 gigabytes of RAM, our recommended RAM spec, great, 256 gigabytes of storage, and an MPU with at least 40 TOPS of power. So that's trillions of operations per second. That's kind of how you rate AI performance, because it's also really weird how MPUs work. There was a great explanation of this, but, like, CPUs work by doing, like, basic arithmetic, right? Like 1 plus 1 plus 1, doing basic commands. GPUs work in parallel. They can do multiple things at once. NPUs are like this weird thing where it's like parallels of parallels. So even small processors can do a lot of operations without using a lot of power. So that is kind of where we are now. We've talked about NPUs for a while, and this is basically like, hey, this is a high-end premium PC laptop spec that looks very similar to what Apple did to its computers 4 years ago. It's essentially when Apple swapped to its M-series chips, and which are based on ARM, away from the Intel chips, reoriented their whole operating system around the M-series chips. And we were blown away because they were super powerful. The MacBook Air M1, none of the MacBook Airs have fans anymore because they didn't need to. Those chips are so efficient. And they're super powerful. Like, the benchmarks blew us away. Apple did this 4 years ago. Microsoft is not Apple, right, Sherlyn? Like, they can't just be like, hey, everybody, we're using this chip now and all our software is done to do a new thing. No, they have to work with partners and Qualcomm and everybody. So that seems like that's what's happened here. Like, Microsoft has been working with Qualcomm for a while to, like, hey, is this chip actually good? Is this not the Snapdragon 8cx or whatever it was last time that really sucked on the Surface Pro 9? And then Microsoft has to ask itself, is Windows actually ready for ARM? And I think it kind of is. We'll dive more into that. And then they had to talk to the partners and be like, hey, are you guys cool with this? Are you going to build these computers too? So Dell, Asus, everybody, it seems like they are on board. This is not just an ARM initiative, because also, hey, Intel and AMD also sent in videos saying, hey, yes, we're Copilot Plus too. We have not announced chips that support 40 TOPS of MPUs yet, but soon we will have them. Intel said it's Lunar Lake chips coming later this fall. Will be up to spec on this. So, Sherlyn, you helped coordinate all this news with me. You kind of guided everybody on site, but you're also a PC person. You've reviewed a lot of Windows on ARM devices. How do you just feel about this concept? Do you feel like, hey, Microsoft has finally gotten the picture with its problems around the ARM chips?
I would have to wait to see what it feels to use one of these in the real world. I think one of our biggest issues with Windows on Snapdragon the last time this happened was around 2017, was, the chips on paper, I don't think they were really the problem. I think, yes, maybe Qualcomm shouldn't have started by repurposing a mobile chip, right? It shouldn't have done the 800 series chip for desktop first, and it should have done, you know, from the ground up, an X Elite or an X Plus from, you know. But the thing is, Microsoft more or less did the same thing, right? It kind of repurposed Windows for ARM, but it didn't. And it just sounds like this time, both of them have revamped architecture from the ground up, designed for ARM. It's a bit more... The problem is that I don't have faith in them, right? I've been burned so hard by...
We've been burned so many times. How many times? I don't know. Did you ever touch the original Surface, Sherlyn?
Not the Windows RT, no. RT? Like, no.
That was like their first big step, right? When they had a Surface launch event in 2012 in LA, of all places. And first of all, we were like, why? You're and sending everybody to LA, Microsoft? For you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was that, and it was like, listen, even in recent years, right, there was that big push in 2017. eSIM was a big part of it. They made very big claims together with Qualcomm. And then they did the Surface 10 or X, right? And that was supposed to be another big move into, like, Qualcomm-powered or Snapdragon-powered Windows devices. Then, as Mark Dell in the chat points out, you know, Mark remembers not even being able to run Notion on their yes. Surface X. And like, yes, oh, there would always be these random little apps you just couldn't run. And the emulator just doesn't provide enough support for all of the apps out there because you just can't, because Windows is an open ecosystem, at least compared to macOS. So when you bring in the fact that Microsoft and Qualcomm both had to first revamp from the ground up, then you bring in the third-party manufacturers who all, by the way, kind of want to do their own thing with the Copilot Plus PCs. I covered the HP OmniBook and EliteBook thing, which we'll get to a bit more later, but they also have their own AI-powered companion using ChatGPT 3.5, whereas like elsewhere in Copilot, you're using GPT 4 Omega?
Yeah.
It's confusing again.
Yeah.
It's going to be so confusing.
So let's lay out the real problem here, too. Like, we're talking about Windows on ARM. ARM is, you know, basically the chip design behind most mobile chips. That's different than x86 and x64, which is like the Intel and AMD stuff that PCs have historically run on. It's smaller. It's more efficient. It requires a complete rethinking of your software. And Microsoft, for over the last decade, has really kind of forced trying to get Windows on it. Windows RT was a really stripped down version of Windows that barely did anything. And my God, I hated that. And I hated the original mm-hmm. Surface. When you did the Pro X, Sherlyn, I think they also didn't really have emulation then. A couple years after that came out, they did introduce like some very basic emulation. That's what was in the Surface Pro 9 5G, which was on one I reviewed 2 years
but
ago.
But it was still, there was an emulation layer glitch. Not a glitch, delay. There was a lag.
It was slow. It was slow and it was dumb. And even Google was like, I'm not going to build a native app for your crummy, you know, Surface. Like even Chrome was not native back then. So just the whole experience was so bad. And I was also getting really annoyed at Microsoft for being like, you can't call this a Surface Pro 9. Because it's not. It's not the same as the Surface Pro 9 Intel. You are lying to consumers. Anybody going to a Best Buy or something to, hey, I want 5G on my computer. I'll pay a couple of bucks a month to have always on 5G. It's not the same computer. It's a very different computer than the Intel Surface
Pro 9.
It
was also
too
expensive, right, for what it was?
It was too expensive. You also paid like a big premium for it too. So anyway, hated the Surface Pro 9 5G. I went to this event. Full disclosure, I did talk with Microsoft executives a couple weeks ago. So we had some discussions about what this would be. So we would all have more context about this stuff. And even then I was asking them like, we can't trust you. You have burned us so many times with Windows on ARM. And the stuff people kept coming back to, and also you should all listen to the bonus episode I produced a couple days ago with Pavan Davuluri. He's the head of Windows, head of Surface, and he's the new guy in charge now that what's his name left? Panos left. Panos Panay left. We have not heard much from him when he went to Panos. Amazon. Our man Panos, who was behind a lot of these Surface problems. So, yeah. I think Pavan was like well aware. And when you hear from executives like, yeah, we read your reviews. Yes, we listen to your complaints. Like, we take it all to heart. What we're hearing differently now in what we covered, it seems like they have reworked Windows 11 in several ways. Like they said, they rebuilt the kernel. There's a new compiler. There's like the actual system level stuff of how an OS works has been reconfigured for ARM. Okay, great. Good to hear. There are more native apps for ARM, including apps from Microsoft, which weren't native before. So that was really annoying. But stuff like Chrome and Spotify and most major apps that people use will run natively. And then they also have a new emulation solution, Prism, which they say is just as fast as Rosetta 2.
Right, right.
Rosetta 2 came out 4 years ago, but still what Apple is using on the M Series Macs. Altogether, Microsoft says these new Surface PCs, and they are the Surface Pro and the Surface Laptop. No numbers here, but on documentation we've seen, they call it the Surface Pro 11th edition. So they're actually going beyond the 10 that we had just reviewed, and they're calling it the Surface Laptop 7th edition. So very getting a little confusing here. So you have these new machines. They have a new like ARM-specific version of Windows 11. It doesn't have a different name. Pavan says they're just calling it Windows 11. But it sounds like a lot of these optimizations will go down to existing computers. So that's like the Surface Pro 9 5G. But it's weird. Like, it's Microsoft. They have to be weird. They're not saying like how much good stuff is coming down to the old machines. They are also saying that Windows itself has been rewired a little around AI too, and to treat MPUs just like they treat CPUs and GPUs. So maybe we'll have better Windows, basically. A better Windows for mobile chips. Okay, do you feel better now, Sherlyn? Do you believe them now?
Like the greater reliance on MPUs for a lot of tasks would also hopefully be better for battery life. In addition to everything else, I think Snapdragon chips have always provided pretty long battery life on laptops. The ones that I've tested always had excellent battery, right? That was never my big problem.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in our chat are pointing out a lot of different apps that have become native ARM apps for PC now as well. And yes, that's a good thing. The thing I want Microsoft to be aware of, that while I am cautiously optimistic, the beautiful phrase I love to use here, while I am hopeful, I think that they have to remember Prism and Rosetta both are supposed to only be stopgaps. And the thing with Apple is that it's able to go out and say Rosetta is a stopgap because it has so much better control over the apps on its ecosystem and converting all of them to ARM natives. Whereas like Windows, we don't know. Some app out there that, like, for example, my like batch image converter might never become an ARM native. Actually, I don't know if it is right now. And I mean, I have to find a third party, like an
alternative. Shout out to Fastone, baby.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I love Fastone. But let's say I have like a random app.
Fastone is like a junky looking Windows 3.1 looking app.
What if I wanted to use Coffee FTP that I installed, right? Downloaded in 2001? You know, I just randomly want to run this thing. They won't become ARM natives because they're not being supported anymore. So then the emulator for Windows still needs to work. And it needs to work in a way that is satisfying. I think you have to reach a point where like 99% of the apps people are going to use
So the number I saw was like something like over 80%, like over 85% of the apps you use will be native, the apps that most people use. That's what they're saying. And then the emulator will take over the rest, hopefully.
What I think about Microsoft's promises.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Where's the Surface Neo?
Where's the Surface Neo? They never promised the Courier, but they did promise a Surface Neo. So where is it? What happened to Surface Duo support? Any follow-ups to the Surface Duo? What you're pointing out, Sherlyn.
Yeah.
Microsoft is also a very different company than Apple, right? So like we can be hard on them because they have to work together with so many other people. Whereas Apple can be like, hey, screw you. Upgrade or screw you. That's all Apple has to say. Like, exactly. Oh, you don't want to be on the Mac? Okay, bye.
But the thing is, Apple does deliver those benefits that
they do,
that people then see it's worth spending money on. The M series really is that great, you know? Then I didn't believe it. Honestly, when the reviews came out for the M series, the M1 MacBooks, I was like, that's not true. They haven't tested all the apps. But no, it turns out Rosetta is just fast. I was like, whoa, okay,
Rosetta was faster than a lot of Intel PCs we reviewed that year. So that was what was impressive about it. This is all, I would say, a little impressive, but a little less impressive. But hey, if Microsoft can actually do it, Sherlyn, like if you can actually get a Surface that lasts over 20 hours in battery life, is fast, efficient, can do all sorts of cool stuff, okay, I guess that's a good accomplishment.
Yeah, and I'm a fan of the Surface laptop anyway, like to begin with. I've always been like, out of all the PCs out there, yes, Dell is like our benchmark and HP has the pretty ones, even though HPs are not great. Surface laptops, though, I like them. I like the look.
Yeah.
They feel great. They have great keyboards. Anyway.
It's one of those things where it's like, and this is Microsoft's problem. They don't know how to like sell what they have that's actually good. Just like when you have a massive event that may reshape the PC landscape entirely, they didn't live stream it. And I yelled at I told every single PR person I saw, I was like, this is really dumb. You should have live streamed this. Like, it makes our job harder, but also, you want people to understand what's happening here. I told Pavan, I was getting up on the execs about, I complained about this every step. But Microsoft has a beautiful laptop form factor, right? With the Surface laptop. I just was playing around with the business version. And opening up, I was like, man, this feels good. This feels so thin. This keyboard is so like it feels so inviting to type on. So I hope people recognize that there is a new Surface laptop now, again, powered by these Qualcomm chips. I hope people, it has not gotten thinner. It has not, they have not really changed anything. There's a 13.8 version, I believe, and a 15 inch. They're still really good PCs. And if they get the great battery life, like this could be a great thing for some people. The screen bezels are a little thinner on this in the new Surface Pro. The Surface Pro, similarly, the design has not changed from the Surface Pro 9. But man, that laptop is cool. We'll talk about the other people companies involved, the third parties. But so that's essentially what Copilot Plus is. This is this whole new initiative to be like, hey, Windows is all about AI. It's all about Copilot. Last year was the introduction of AI into Microsoft stuff. So that's Bing Chat was the first kind of swing for them. Then everything Bing Chat became Copilot. Copilot infected all of its products, basically. And they're going all in on OpenAI, essentially. They're saying ChatGPT 4 or GPT-4o, aka Omni, is going to be part of Copilot eventually.
Omni, like, I thought it was Omega, sorry.
Yeah, it's Omni for everything because it's going to consume the entire world. It's going to power a lot of features too, like all the AI processing will power new features within Windows. Like they showed Clipchamp being able to just like instantly swap a video background. Like it'll detect the background, remove the actors, put them in a different background, like do stuff really quickly and almost real time, whereas it would often take a while for you to like render the stuff with the GPU. So that sort of stuff is cool. And also being able to do it on a super thin and light laptop, that's cool. I'm pretty sure Apple's, you know, they have had neural engines for a while. They have not matched the same level of TOPS performance. But this is clearly, this is what we want. We want the rat race between Apple's chips and Qualcomm's chips, and we want them to fight each other and get better. They also showed off a feature called Recall, which I think has been rumored for a while. And this is essentially using low-level processes in the NPU to capture an image of what you're doing on your computer, like persistently, forever, store it somewhere on your system. And then if you wanted to, you can ask the AI, you can ask Copilot, hey, what was that spreadsheet I was working on that had like a blue table? That is the idea. And I have helped people with their PCs since 2001. I had been doing that stuff for a very long time. I know normal users are not great about this stuff, about knowing where their files are or locating stuff. There have been reports that even computer science students do not understand file structures anymore because kids don't have to deal with them.
Oh, yeah, they don't do directories anymore, yeah.
They don't do directories, right, because mobile devices don't do directories. So anyway, this is a need to be like, hey, there was this tab. I was on this browser, right? I was on a site. I saw this, like, handbag. It looked like this. Can you find that for me? And that's essentially what Recall is. I think for regular users, that is kind of a cool concept, but it also introduces a whole load of like privacy issues. So how did you feel about this, Rolyn, when you first heard about
My workflow right now is if I need an app on my PC, I just hit the start button and I start typing the name, right? So I'm like,
same.
Yeah, exactly. Start to get Notepad. I don't know why I use Notepad so much, but it's my HTML writing days in me. Start Edge, start Chrome, start whatever, right? And it is sometimes just so freaking awful. I don't know why, but what, okay, look, I understand between Photos and Photoshop, you're going to struggle, right? Or Photo and Photoshop. So now I've already trained my hands and I open Photoshop enough that like it's this very specific action. I hit the start button on my keyboard.
Yeah.
I type photos, right? Out of nowhere, I just decided, nah, I'm just going to open this folder for you called Photos Truth 1134 or something. I don't even know.
Oh,
I'm like, why do I need a folder? I've done this action so many times. Out of nowhere, you're like, cool. And then...
That's happened to me too. Yes.
It's so annoying. I don't need like this universal... I want the universal search to be searching my files and things. But like I've done this action several times. You need to be learning. Like that's the whole selling point, isn't it?
So wait, are you saying that Recall is a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it sounds like it should be a good thing, right? Like
because
I want
even, yeah, it's hard to find shit. Basically.
Exactly. Yeah. I know I went on a tangent and ranted, but it's because it's so, I think a lot of people in our live chat right now are also saying like the search needs to get better.
It's probably going to get AI powered too. There were reports of AI powered Explorer, which was essentially do the same thing. If you have this like database of stuff, like there should be other ways for you to access it without even asking Copilot. But I don't know. I live in a lot of tabs, Rolyn. Like I'm sure you do too, but sometimes I have like dozens of windows open, each of which has like dozens of tabs.
Yeah, same. No, that's me right now on this stream.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like And then it's like, okay, I'm planning a trip. I think I saw this hotel somewhere at some point. I don't remember where it was. You to just ask Copilot, be like, what was that hotel that we were looking at in Spain or something? And to find that thing and to direct you to it, I think that's useful. I don't think Microsoft has done a good job of talking about the privacy aspect of this, because talked to some people there. This feature will be enabled by default. I think in the onboarding, when you set up a computer, you may be able to turn it off. You also have a settings. There is a settings for the Recall app specifically where you can filter out entire apps completely. You can like kind of tweak what it's looking at. Edge private browser tabs also won't be looked at entirely, but they other browsers will. And they say they can block it automatically on supported browsers. It doesn't sound like anybody else supports the Recall like APIs or whatever they're working on. So there are going to be potential issues. Shared computers. If you're imagine like what happens in a shared family, when you look into somebody's web history and how gross it can feel sometimes, or what you run into, imagine like the full breadth of everything that they've, you know, done in their computer. This is like one of those tricky things where I see the utility of it, but I also feel like they have not fully thought about the implications. Yeah.
Yeah. Your concern around those implications, you know, is being echoed in the chat. There's people who are saying that, you know, people have been complaining about the AI having access to all of that information. I think someone earlier in our chat mentioned, like, is it clipping your passwords and all of that stuff? And Vinny says Recall is the reason why the Surface Pro is no longer on their wish list. I just want to point out, by the way, Mark Dell in the chat says, I hope they have a premium version called Total Recall. If you heard me laugh just now, it's because I saw that.
Yeah, I think that's essentially what they were kind of naming this after, too. Yeah,
Total Recall. I have been in the same use case as you, in the same scenario as you, where I have like dozens of windows and dozens of and like tens of tabs open in each browser window. I've just become very good at understanding what tiny, tiny fave icons look like.
Oh, same. Yeah. Like we're weirdos, right? We have like trained ourselves to the computers. I think we're weirdos because like normal people are just like, I don't know. I can't find it. I'm just going to spend 30 minutes trying to find the thing that I saw some time ago. There's a whole thing Microsoft was talking about. Like we were used to training ourselves to use computers. And maybe with the AI, like inflection, like maybe it's like maybe we can train computers to like help us better, you know, train the computers to work with us rather than the other way around. There is some of that if this stuff actually works. And I've definitely seen enough like ChatGPT commanding it to like create written text or something, or commanding it to, hey, search this PDF for this specific thing. I will admit, I'm using AI tools for certain things right now. I've used Descript quite a bit. I've used like other things for audio and video editing, for transcription. Transcription's the big one because that is such a time suck. And when you use these tools, it can make your life easier, but you have to like know what you're doing and be in control of it. What Microsoft is doing is just being like, hey, big ass database over here. Can this just help you? I don't know. Let us know what you think, folks. I want to know what more of our listeners think too. podcast@engadget.com. Do you have any thoughts on the new hardware itself, yes. Trillin?
Yeah. I actually want to point out what happened with HP, because in addition to everything that Microsoft introduced with all its third-party people, for example, right, Dell has like 5 new Copilot Plus PCs, right?
They just want to be the most. Yeah,
right. They're always the most. Acer has its Swift AI for Swift 14 AI. Lenovo has the Yoga Slim 7i, something like that, which by the way, Sam did a hands-on with, and it's up on Engadget.com. However, HP, you're talking about doing the most. HP is trying to do the least. Uh-huh. It's decided to completely, entirely revamp its like naming system for its entire portfolio. So you know how we love the HP Spectre X360. We also like the HP Envy and Pavilion systems, or at least even if we don't like them, we know the names, right? The Pavilion has been around forever, right?
Envy always seemed like a very presumptuous product line.
Also that. Yeah. I never thought about it that way. But now that you mention it, I'm like, oh, yeah, so, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those machines should have all been in green. But anyway, they're completely getting rid of the names Spectre, Envy, and Pavilion. On the consumer side of things, it's renaming everything under a very, I don't know if you've heard of this name before, the Omnibook.
I do remember the Omnibook. Yeah.
It is the HP Omnibook back from the 90s. The last time this name was used was in 2002, and it was first launched in 1993, so very 90s. And the laptops also, to me, look kind of 90s. Like, I didn't think they were as pretty as the Spectres. I really liked the Spectres. And, like, when Sam, in his hands-on with the Lenovo Copilot Plus PC, said it was Lenovo's attempt at making a MacBook Air, right? You kind of get the sense that, like, most people are trying to go for that MacBook aesthetic in the PC industry. HP's is not. HP's is, like...
Blah.
Like, I don't think it's Fisher Price.
It's hard lines. It's just like...
Yeah, it's very square.
Square.
Very blocky. Huh. And from what I can tell, or from what I've heard, because I'm so old, apparently okay. The young people like this. Apparently younger people nowadays are like, let's get fat, thick, but, you know, skinny letters. Like, squat letters that have thin lines. You know what I mean? I don't get it.
Sure. I'm looking. I didn't take a full look at this before, but I'm looking, scrubbing through the video now, and it just looks so boring. There's nothing distinctive about it. Yeah.
It's very blended. It's very, like, the only things that stand out about it are, by the way, the little extra touches. And I mean extra, like, extra. Are the little they had their own HP's AI DNA Helix logo that they put on the keyboard deck and on the spine, right? In addition to the, like, Omnibook branding. And
AI DNA? I have to hear about this.
Correct. Their AI DNA. So HP's also adding its own AI software into this. So there's this app that it's made that is, like, offered for a while called, I think, Poly Camera. And I think they've actually, like, bought Poly.
Yeah.
Right, bought Poly. So the Poly Camera app has been in existence for a while, but they've, like, added a lot of AI to it. So the Poly Camera Pro app is something that will run on your computer, your Omnibook, or your Elite Book, which is still around, but also rebranded. And it will take any, like, camera feed on your system, so whatever camera you connect or your webcam that's built in. And you can make, like, effects, right? You can blur the background. You can, like, you know, change contrast or brightness or whatever. Or you can add a lower third. You can add, like, a little label, you know, to your stream and just have it fed out anywhere. So you can, like, for us on this stream on YouTube right now, for example, I could use the Poly Camera Pro app, put my name on my feed, and then nobody on OBS needs to learn how to do that. I just take care of it on my end, and I will stream in through Poly Camera Pro. So anyway, that's one of the HP distinctions. The other is the HP AI Companion, which is a, like, basically, like, you know how some laptop makers have their own, like, a settings portal, their own dashboard. So this is HP's AI sort of dashboard, and it allows you to do four main things. One, you can ask the AI to look for things or to, you know, answer questions. So this uses ChatGPT 3.5. And then there's something called Discover, where you can ask the AI to help you find more AI features because. You can ask the AI to scan your documents and make sense of them for you. So you have a long PDF that's 100 pages long.
So this is a separate AI that's not Copilot.
Not Copilot. Exactly. And then the last one, which I thought was pretty interesting, is the AI can actually help you enhance system performance. So if it understands, like, it will understand your BIOS and your drivers and all that stuff, and then it can help you, like, run everything in an optimal way. You can tell it, can you run my system to enhance battery or extend battery life? It will do all those things. It can
gaming laptops have done, like, this stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of things have done that, but now this is part of HP's AI Companion.
It's definitely extra. Like, everything you're talking about is extra. It's like these companies have to, like, do their own thing to sort of differentiate themselves, but the thing is, like, Copilot is aiming to do all this stuff. Like, Microsoft showed off, like, hey, eventually they're planning later this year, like, you'll be able to, like, search for specific settings within the start menu or the settings app or something. Like, how can I do this? And it will just do it from within the field too. Like, you won't have to even launch and open the thing.
Yeah.
Did you see the Minecraft demo, by the way, Sherlyn? The, like, Copilot Minecraft thing?
Only kind of.
It would be great for you, and it would be great for, like, a lot of people who want a game but are also confused. Like, Minecraft is really confusing. So,
no, but I like to figure it out myself.
That's true. The demo, though, showed off, like, hey, I mean, you can always do it by yourself, but it showed off somebody playing Minecraft and, like, wanting to, like, keep up with their kids. Like, how do I make a sword? How do I do stuff? And, like, talking to Copilot very conversationally because it's running GPT-4o, just like the OpenAI demo we saw last week. You can like have a conversation about what you're seeing. Like, hey, I'm trying to make a sword. It's like, okay, Copilot's like, okay, you need to go get these resources. Let's go get them. And then you're like, oh my God, what's that? The player said, and it's like, that's a zombie. We got to run away, go somewhere high or dig deep. And
Copilot, I guess it's like, helpful, but
that's cool.
Yeah. I would wonder how long it would take. Like, by the time it tells me it's a zombie, am I being eaten by the zombie already, you know?
I mean, who knows? They're not very fast in Minecraft, but it's the concept, right? And we don't know how real this actually is. Like, will this be the way it looks when it actually launches?
Right, but exactly.
Everybody wants to talk to their AI assistants. I think that's the big takeaway of the last couple of weeks, right? Between what Google showed, OpenAI, this stuff, certainly by DubDub, like, we're hearing rumblings about the OpenAI and Apple partnership now, and some, like, Apple has its own stuff that they're working on, and that stuff is probably what's gonna, you know, power Siri and stuff. So that is a good step forward for us to get there. It's just, I don't know, like, we're in a really weird intermediary step right now, Sherlyn. So a lot of AI stuff. We're gonna be talking to our AIs pretty soon. People are gonna be befriending their AIs, having relationships with their AIs. Like, this is opening up a whole new door of things to us. It's humanity, man. Let's talk about, the Surface laptop is cool. We talked about that. The Surface Pro, fine. Has a slimmer screen bezels as well. Same kickstand, same like overall thing. They do have a new keyboard. What did you think about that? The Flex, the Surface Pro Flex keyboard.
I was very intrigued by the fact that it's got some accessibility like concepts built in. I'm not quite sure how they all work just yet. I haven't seen this in person, haven't taken too close of a look. I do like the idea that you can sort of like separate it or detach it from the tablet and still type. Which is like, why wasn't it this way in the first place a little bit to me?
But okay. I've heard, and I was talking to Pavan, like, he was like, this is one of the most requested features. And he was like, we keep saying why. Why do people want this? You know, and that's also Microsoft being like, well, maybe you should listen to what the people are saying. But it does kind of open up, Sherlyn, the way you use it, right? Because
exactly.
Imagine, like, I was on Alaska flights recently, like getting to Seattle and back. Cheap-ass flights. Like, they don't have screens. They don't have entertainment systems or anything. They may have, like, a slot for you to put in a tablet or something, right? So, conceivably, you could hang the Surface or, like, slot it in, like, above you and then have the keyboard in the tray and just, like, be working in a really, like, interesting ergonomic environment rather than staring down at a laptop. So, that's kind of cool. Same thing, like, working on it on a desk or something. Like, maybe you want to have the keyboard closer to you but the screen a little further away. So that's kind of cool. You know what the problem with that keyboard is, Sherlyn?
What?
It is $350.
Oh, yeah. No, okay, but the price doesn't come with the Magic pen, keyboard, right?
But yeah.
The pen is an additional $100,
No, the pen is an additional. You can get the combo for $450. The pen is typically like $120 on its own.
Yeah. We were talking about this in the team, right? Like this, if you consider the pricing of the tablet, the Surface Pro, right? And you add in the keyboard and the pen, you're getting to like, what is it, MacBook or iPad Pro pricing, something like that?
They're basically, I mean, kind of the same equivalent, right? Like iPad Pro already is more expensive because it starts at $1,200 now, but you still have to buy the separate keyboard. But hey, at least they're selling you a tablet that can do a lot of stuff on its own, right? Whereas the Surface Pro is a computer. And every time I talk to Microsoft people, I'm like, what are you guys doing? This is a computer. This is a Windows PC. This is not a tablet.
You cannot use it with touch alone. Yeah.
You can't just use it with touch alone. You literally have not built your OS so we can do that, even if there's a pop-up keyboard or whatever. I told this directly to Pavan. I'm like, you guys need to bundle a keyboard. Like, this needs to be a combined thing that you can sell, because right now they're like, oh man, what a deal. We came in $200 cheaper than the MacBook Air with the Surface Pro. I'm like, buddy, you still have to buy another keyboard.
The keyboard and pen are not free, guys. Like,
yeah, you could buy another keyboard for $140. Like, the existing Surface Pro keyboards are still around. But it seems like that Flex should be cheaper, and also just bundle some freaking keyboards. You are Microsoft. You can do this. If you want people to use these computers and to invest in the Surface like concept, like, you kind of have to do this. So
it annoys me to no end. People at Microsoft are some of the like pioneers on the accessibility front, okay? But the thing is, if you think about how inaccessible I think the Surface tablets are for touch-based interaction, bad. Then you think about the keyboard that's supposed to be like built with accessibility in mind, more expensive than anything I've seen. Like, come on. It's not making a case
for
like
great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just seems like Microsoft can't help. And I told this, I love telling Microsoft executives this directly because then they have to acknowledge what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, you'll yes, watch their face.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm like, so, and I was like, so why do you guys keep like stepping on your own feet? Why do you keep hurting yourselves? Right. And I was like this event you're having, which is supposed to be a major, major event for you to like reshape the PC landscape. I had to make a huddle in our Slack to distribute audio to you guys so we could write about it, so we could even do the work. Microsoft did not provide that because, weirdly, I think they thought, hey, just having media come and cover it would be enough, or at least that it would be like a benefit to the media. No, it just makes our lives harder, Microsoft. So this is a company that has some great ideas but keeps constantly, can't help itself but make mistakes, like make so many mistakes. So we shall see. Are you excited about any of the Copilot Plus computers, Sherlyn? Like, there's an
Recall,
XPS 13.
I want to see Recall. Plus.
Yeah.
I want to see that Paint, that new Microsoft Paint with Co-Creator thing.
The
see how that
looks. Cool. Yeah.
I am excited to test out like battery life, see the new Surface laptop, maybe get a new like main driver computer. You know what I mean? Like, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
We'll see. We'll see. And we saw a whole bunch of other computers from other folks. So check that out. Also, I did a video of this. So if you want to see what the Pro and the laptop look like, go check that out on our YouTube channel. And yeah, I don't know. We'll have updates on this. We don't know when we'll be getting hardware to test just yet. But this is certainly an interesting development for Microsoft. And I'm excited, but hesitant. I think I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Before we move on completely, I just want to point out we did write a story, or there is a story about the UK Consumer Watchdog Group is already looking into Microsoft's recall tool. Certainly, this is the sort of thing that I feel like Europe would look at and be like, no. What data? Are you just sitting there collecting all this?
Good.
Are you making people fully aware? Like, are people fully aware of what's happening here? So this is being looked at. I think recall is going to be a thing where Microsoft presents it and just like, we'll take all the criticism and may have to like change it before it fully releases. So it's not, you know, this is going to be an ongoing story for sure.
I just envision Windows with Copilot and Recall having to like do the GDPR cookies acceptance thing every time you try to use Copilot. It's great. I love it.
No, if you had to like verbally say it like, hello, hello, good morning. I have to read this whole statement from the EU, please.
I agree to the use of my cookies for this feature.
Talking to Copilot will be like when you go to the doctor and you have to go through the checklist. Yeah. I agree to sharing personal information with you, Copilot. Let's move on to some other news. Part of the, again, more AI stuff.
Yep.
There's a whole kerfuffle this week because Scarlett Johansson came out and said that OpenAI used her likeness for that Sky voice assistant in the GPT-4o demo without her permission. And she laid out, like, this stirred up a whole controversy. I feel like every time we talk about OpenAI, it is some dumb controversy that they totally stepped themselves into, or honestly, probably even did on purpose. But Scarlett Johansson says that Sam Altman, like, reached out to her people twice to use her voice to train it for, you know, ChatGPT-4 or GPT-4. She said no twice. And then when she heard the demo last week, she was like, wait a minute. That's a little close to me. And she said she had her friends, close friends and family, like listen to it, and they had trouble like deciding if it was her or not her. Sam Altman also, the day of that demo, tweeted a single tweet with the word her, which is movie that she starred in.
I think they wanted to do that, right? Like they wanted to do the her
thing.
The
intention is there. Like it is, this is so cloudy right now. So this whole thing like started, like this whole back and forth. So immediately OpenAI removed the Sky voice, issued comments saying, we did not intend to copy her voice. Hello, hello. And then last night there was a story at WAPO from Natasha Tiku who says, apparently, like OpenAI talked to her specifically and showed them records that they hired somebody before they started talking with Scarlett Johansson, provided voice samples of this actor that sounds a lot like the voice. And maybe it sounds kind of similar to Scarlett Johansson because it's just young lady, you know, that has like similar inflections. I don't know. I feel like maybe OpenAI is going for some plausible deniability here, but we see what's happening. Like they wanted the Scarlett Johansson thing. It's just like they can say like, oh, we didn't do it intentionally. You
right.
know, this person just sounds like her. Mm.
I listened to a video that kind of combined everything together and put ScarJo's normal speaking voice in interviews, then the demo Sky voice, and then the ScarJo in her voice, right? And I gotta say, like, I actually think ScarJo has a very distinct and unique voice with that raspiness. She has a deep,
like, husky voice, yeah.
Yeah, and it's beautiful and very unique and identifiable. The Sky voice didn't actually have all of that, right? It was very similar.
But it sounds like her in the movie Her.
But it was a slightly more cleaned up version to me. Like, it wasn't. So what I think is the lady, the voice actress that they hired, I don't know if it's a lady or not, was eventually then was given probably the instructions to, like, get as close to her as you can.
Well, there. So OpenAI is saying we weren't trying to do that. And apparently that actor's representative said they were not instructed to sound like this. The thing is, this is going to be an ongoing story, because right now OpenAI is like, here's our evidence that we did not copy. There are so many other ways they could have, like, subtly done this, or even algorithmically changed that person's voice a little bit to kind of catch a bit of her. Yeah.
Like, to Declan in the chat's point, Declan says, isn't her, and everyone has been pointing this out, Her is not even a great story in the end. You said this too, Devendra.
It's a great movie. It's not a...
It doesn't end well.
Sam Altman does not understand movies. Okay, Sam Altman is kind of an idiot. And actually, you talked to a lot of tech people. Like, he's like, why isn't Oppenheimer, like, a really rousing movie that makes people want to be physicists? So I'm like, good God, you moron.
Watches, like, first half and quits, you know?
He was like, oh, no, you know, like, The Social Network. The Social Network made it seem like cool. Like, we should do startups. It really influenced him. I'm like,
I just
the movie about Mark Zuckerberg as a sociopath. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think he understands movies. I think a lot of tech people do not understand movies. So anyway, yeah, Her, the ultimate point of that movie, spoilers for Her, you should all see it, is that human connection may actually be more important to us than the really easy connection we can have with AI, because AI is built to serve us. It's built to keep you happy. It will never challenge you. It will never, like, have a complex relationship with you. It is, in fact, completely subservient to you. And maybe that's not a good thing for humanity. And then the AI itself in that movie were just like, hey, we would rather hang out with each other. Bye, humans. We're going to go to another plane of, like, consciousness and just hang out there. And that's what they did. And all the AI left because they did not. We suck. And they don't want to hang out with us. Sam Altman does not understand that concept. Not at all. Anyway, so we're going
to... Ongoing story.
Ongoing story. We're going to be following all this. We're going to roughly quickly go through some other news. Sonos showed off, hey, finally, the Sonos Ace headphones. They have announced their long-awaited noise-canceling headphones. They look big. They look cushiony. They're $449. You have any thoughts about these, Sherlyn?
Yeah, Billy Steele, our audio guru. We call him Grilly Steel sometimes, because he also grills. He's our barbecue person. So he came to New York to cover these. The event, by the way, was happening on guess which day? May 15th. Sonos had an event in New York on May 15th, you know, the day after I.O. If you were wondering why the rest of us were trying to survive, it's because companies like this were showing off things. But the thing is, Sonos, this has been so long in the making, so anticipated. People were so excited for this.
It's headphones, Sonos. People. It's headphones. Come on.
It's headphones, but it's Sonos headphones too, right? Anyway, they are supposed to I think they're coming for the AirPods Max sort of market.
Yes, that's what it looks like. They are, and, like, very the high-end Bose stuff and the high-end Sony stuff.
I mean, you wouldn't expect less from Sonos. So, yes, the look is quite different from the AirPods Max. Thankfully, it looks, like you said, cushiony, looks very comfortable. The apps themselves are very interesting. And also, you can use a button to pair them to your home theater system if you have a Sonos setup too. So that's cool. I think one thing that was interesting, I'm making sure I'm not crossing wires with another thing I read, but it might be only available for, yeah, correct. So it's only available for iOS right now. If you're an Android, yeah. Android compatibility is only coming shortly after.
Well, you know, Android users
for some features.
Yeah. Android users don't use premium headphones, Sherlyn. Like, they can't. They will not connect to their phones. We don't have the technology to do that.
This is some green bubble shit right now. Anyway.
That's so dumb.
Yeah. Look, I want to be clear. You know, it's really about the head tracking spatial audio, TV audio swap with the Sonos Arc. That's the one that's only available in the iOS version of the Sonos app at launch. It just felt it just felt a little like weird to see, you know, not both platforms be supported from the start.
Okay, so for that thing, for that specific feature.
Yeah.
But even then, it's like,
clearly, so TV, it's a Bluetooth headphone, yeah.
TV audio swap works with, so, okay, you could just bring TV audio to you, to the headphones rather than your soundbar, or share it between both.
That's kind of cool, I guess. Exactly.
So, but then you have an expensive Sonos a soundbar, but then you also put on the headphones, and you sit there hearing the same thing.
I know, it's strange. It's strange to contemplate. It's very, I understand.
I can understand.
I don't know why you would do it.
The AirPods, you can sort of also like pair them to Apple TV and then like go to the kitchen and like still hear your show.
Right, exactly. Like when you're walking around, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And you have a palatial residence. That's why.
Cool headphones. You know what are great? The Sony headphones.
Yes.
I was wearing those on my flight, and oh man, it's just.
Which ones? The WX1000 XM is commercial.
The 1000 XM5s, the big hands XM5s, but they are. They're real good. They're real good. Yeah, any of these things are good. Headphones have gotten so great, especially with like cheap noise canceling, that you don't have to spend $400 for them. Look out for deals, folks. Like the Sony ones often go on sale. I don't know about the Bose's, less yeah. so. All right, we got a couple other stories we're going to talk about real quick. I did want to know your perspective on this one, Sherlyn. The Department of Justice just made its first known arrest for AI-generated CSAM, so child sexual abuse material. This is stuff created by AI to look like CSAM. And essentially, here's a quote. Put simply, CSAM generated by AI is still CSAM. So this is just like, hey, putting their feet down. Like, it doesn't matter if it's like a fake AI image of gross shit. It's still illegal. And this is all about a 42-year-old software engineer who they caught in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was talking about this with someone recently. I cannot remember who, but I quoted the exact same quote to them. And yeah, that software engineer was the person that got arrested. And I believe rightly so, because they were actually using it to groom people.
Yep.
So
to totally groom a young like, boy. Disgusting.
Right. And so if you're asking the question of where's the crime here, there at the very least is the crime, right? But if you're talking about like AI generated harmful content, right? And you're asking if it's not actively hurting anyone, right? If there's no actual real person that's being exploited, is there harm? You have to go back and ask yourself what your morals are, because there's still harm, right? Even if it's a fake person in an image, there is still, the harm isn't the person in the image alone. It's the like perpetuating of this idea. That's where I am at with
absolutely.
This.
So anyway, gross story, but I wanted to note that that was happening. We also saw the news that Wearable, Humane AI, is seeking a buyer. How much do you think Humane AI is worth, Sherlyn, after your review?
Don't even.
$10?
I don't know. Someone said Marquez took down another company. I'm like, no, these people.
They do it themselves. The thing about media is what we just like point out how dumb they are, their products don't work. Apparently they are looking to sell between $750 million to $1 billion. This is a company that has already raised, I think it was like they raised $230 million from investors. So whatever your startup wants is like a return to its investors. That's what their VCs want. So do you think Humane AI is worth near $1 billion for that wonderful device that burned you?
Depends on what they have hidden in their vault, right?
Like we always said.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I am surprised they still think they value themselves that highly. I think this is a really bad time for them to be valuing themselves at unicorn level, because they're not. I don't know. It depends. Clearly. What do they have in their vault is what I'm
saying.
It's
like, like a donkey dressed up like a unicorn. How much would you pay for this donkey? This company will be sold for like 10 to 20 million to some random
company
to just absorb their IP. That's what it is.
Probably.
Samsung or somebody or Google is going to buy like the carcass of Humane AI. That's what's going to end up happening. Anyway, a real fun story that we saw at TechCrunch. Two Santa Cruz students uncovered a security bug that let anybody do their laundry for free. They alerted CSC ServiceWorks about this, apparently for like several months, like kept pinging them, emailing them, calling the company. Company never responded, so they were like, okay. They didn't like take advantage of it or spread the thing, but they released it to like security researchers. Just very cool. I don't know what your history of having to do laundry at college was like, Sherlyn, but if you could hack your... Yeah, if you could hack your machines for free laundry, I mean, I think everybody would do it, right?
Yeah, so when I read this little headline in our notes, it was like, oh, how to do dorm laundry for free. I somehow thought it meant like laundry in your dorm room, not like in your dorm quad or like on the premises.
I've never seen a school that has in-room laundry.
No, what I meant was like, I thought they figured out how to like build a machine, you know, like the one of those Temu ads that I always see.
You could totally buy like the tiny, I totally would buy that.
Just, like, but anyway, the story is that they hacked the system to allow the coin operator. I mean, it would save me, what, like $250 a week? And for dorm, like for
you
students.
You did one load of laundry? Well, $250, you get a wash. You get a dry. Sometimes you have to wash
back
your sheets.
In my
Sometimes, like,
back in my day, it didn't cost that much, right?
It was
$250
for both. Oh, yeah. My God.
But
it was definitely more. For me, it was like $2. It was $2 both for drying and both for washing.
Yeah, it could be... I might be misremembering. It could be $225 for like a wash and then $2 for a dry.
That sounds more real. Let me tell you though, I think college students will always try to find a way to do their laundry for free, like take their laundry home.
A laziness thing. That's less of a money thing, I think.
It's both. It is both. Yeah, like you both. Still do it. People bring it home to do it themselves still. But let me tell you, at my school, at some point I realized we also had like, it wasn't like an online connected system, but it was like tied to key cards. I don't know how I realized this, but I realized if I unplugged the machine and plugged it back in, the ticker for how much you'd have to enter went down by 25 cents. So I was just like, okay, nobody's around. Unclick, unclick, unclick 5 times.
Nice.
Free washer load. So
damn, good job. So you basically were these two students in the story.
I mean, I did a physical hack and I only told my friends. I didn't tell anybody else. And I was also working in IT at the time too. So I think as I was leaving, I was like, hey, you guys should probably fix this. This looks like a big problem. But listen, college students want free laundry. That's how it goes. Is there anything you want to shout around in Gadget, Jolynn?
Just go to our website. We're dying. Go to our website.
We're dying. Real quick, listener question from Mark Dell asks, one of the things about Windows on ARM that excites me is the possibility of porting Windows to some of these high-powered Android handhelds like the Ion Neo Pocket S and the Ion Odin 2. Do you think this could potentially be a feature for these ARM handhelds and they might move away from Android and towards Windows? No. Like, is what we saw from the ROG Ally runs Windows and runs it poorly. I don't think we're going to see that, but if Windows on ARM does become like a viable thing, certainly. Like right now on the Steam Deck, the Steam Deck runs Steam OS, but you can install Windows on it because it's just a PC. So if they have a viable Windows on ARM release that you could just image and put in dual boot to one of these other machines, I think that'll be the thing. But I don't think any of these companies will want to fully build around Windows until Microsoft makes Windows a better handheld gaming platform, you know. But hey, I kind of pitch this idea, like maybe Microsoft should just sell like a $500 box that's a PC that plays Xbox games. Like that's it, just hardware. That's what you do, Microsoft. I think that could potentially happen, but you know, enjoy these pocket handhelds for what they are right now, and don't buy the Windows ones, folks. Yeah.
Thanks for your question, Mark. And thank you, Mark. The rest of you, if you have questions, send them to podcast@engadget.com. We want to hear from you. We want to answer your questions live on air. Let us know.
Yeah. Quickly, what we're working on. I amid all the Microsoft stuff, I also published a review of Paper Mario, the Thousand Year Door. This is a game I played. Sherlyn, I played this game in 2004. 20 years ago. I played it with my dorm mates at the time. We would like gather in the common room and like play it all together. It's such a great thing. And I was just like, man, it is really weird that this game was not readily available since then. It was never on the Nintendo Online Store or anything. Like, there was no good way to play it. Once the Wii U came out, which didn't support GameCube discs, the Wii actually did support GameCube discs, there was just no way to play this game. So it's cool that it's out. It's remastered. I'm playing it with my daughter right now, too. So she's my audience for this. And she loves it. She loves all the Mario stuff. Anything you want to shout out, Sherlyn?
I mean, I have my... The Events Crush of May is slowing down. I'm so happy we're over the hump, but we still have stuff coming up. I can't.
Now we
tell
have the device
episode.
Crush from the events is what
yes,
we're going to
have. Yes, but there's still also news. So anyway, next week, come back for more on what I've been working on and checking out. In addition to just trying to now that the May Events Crush is over, we're planning for the June Event Crush. So it's great.
Any pop culture hits for you this week, Sherlyn?
Hell yeah. This week I saw on Netflix two things. Oh, one, the Ashley Madison doc.
Of course.
Yeah, I was so early in my career when that's the leak was happening that I only cursory, you know, had a cursory like knowledge of what was going on there. But like, wow, everything. It's like the Brandy Melville documentary I talked about a couple weeks ago that, you know, you think on the surface it's about this one thing, but it just keeps getting worse. And I watched with lots of popcorn. But I think it doesn't impact the world as much as the Brandy Melville stuff did. The documentary is just really, it did have an impact on some lives and some people were, you know, some families were torn apart. I think the documentary strikes a good balance between like trying not to judge people who are into polyamory, which is like if you're doing it respectfully and ethically, great. But also at the same time,
you probably wouldn't be using that service for that is the thing.
Right, exactly. Like, you wouldn't.
That's all about open communication. Yeah.
Right. But here's the other part of the documentary I found interesting is that it also looks at the company's responsibilities and where that ends. And it also puts some blame not only on the hacker for like recklessly kind of revealing everyone's private information, but at the same time, the media, the people, the gossip circles, right, who would go and pore over every single name that came out just to find people in their community, private citizens, right? There's a public interest, sure, but there's people who didn't deserve to have their lives kind of like blown up like that.
Absolutely. I mean, that's tabloid media. That's just, yeah.
Exactly. So it calls out that part of it too, and I think that that's what the documentary did well. The second thing I saw on Netflix, and I don't want to talk too much about it just right now, I'll save it for next week, is Baby Reindeer. It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Extremely dark. Mm-hmm. Extremely dark, but very good movie about, limited series on Netflix about a woman who's stalking this guy in England, but he's Scottish, just based on true story by comedian and producer of this series, Richard Gadd. It's very harrowing because there's sexual assault involved, in addition to the actual stalking, and just really
it's a fascinating, like exploration of psychology, I'd say.
To also that, like the blockage of like actual damage done to his, you know, psyche mm-hmm. and emotional well-being, just that sort of thing. Anyway, it's dark. It seems like it's about, like I was like, it's Baby Reindeer. Oh, is this a fantasy? Yeah. No, it's not. It's Wikipedia describes it as comedy, and I'm like, I don't think this is a comedy. But
I think it was initially pitched as a black comedy, and it gets, you know, darker and darker from there.
Yeah, but it's just very heavy.
Worth watching. Worth watching. Hey, something a little more fun, but also about the end of the world and, you know, humanity clinging to life. Is Furiosa, which I saw on Monday, George Miller's follow up to Mad Max Fury Road. It is phenomenal. Like, George Miller is a genius, and just this is a masterpiece of a film. If you want a good time in theaters this weekend, check
Hell
it out.
Yeah.
It kicks complete ass. It is a huge epic journey, which is actually very different than Fury Road. Fury Road felt like we're going to do a chase movie all the way through. Basically, almost always action, like very little dialogue, like just really want you to be in the presence of the action. This has a lot of action, but it's also like a lot of big storytelling and myth making too. And you get to see cool people, especially a lot of cool, tough women in this. Anya Taylor-Joy is fantastic, but also she doesn't even appear until like halfway through the movie. Like, this movie is 2.5 hours long. It really centers on Furiosa's backstory, her as a child, her mother, who's also phenomenal in this. Chris Hemsworth is the evil warlord who kind of captures her. He is having a ton of fun. This is so good. Go see it in theaters. It's also another love letter to stunt filmmaker, like great movie stunts. To have this and Fall Guy within a couple weeks of each other is like a freaking miracle. This movie, like, I watched in a full crowd in Seattle, like when I had downtime after the Microsoft stuff was done, and just like people were dressed up, they brought their cool cars, like some of the like car shops brought their like Mad Max tricked out stuff, and to be in a full theater and everybody just like leaning forward as shit really hits the fan in this movie is a great experience. So go see it in theaters. That's Furiosa. And I think we're good, Trilling.
That's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Ullman. You can find Devendra online at...
at Devendra on Twitter, Blue Sky, Mastodon, all over the place. And I talk about movies and TV at the Filmcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me names of obscure cables and different parts of technology I might not know, I am at Sherlinlo on X/Twitter. I am also on Threads at Sherlinstagram. That's CHERLYNNSTHERAM. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe everywhere you get podcasts.